And welcome in to In-Game Chat for Saturday, August the 22nd, 2026. It is Season 20, Episode 26. I'm Scott.
And I'm RJ.
And welcome into the show, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. If you want to get in touch with us, of course, we've got Discord going on. That's the best way to do it. But you can also go to ingamechat.net to check out all the links to get in touch with us. You can find us over on Twitter at InGameChat. You can also find us on Facebook as well. You can email us, everyone, at ingamechat.net. Nobody emails us anymore, but we're there. We're waiting for them. Not that we'd reply. We'd reply on air. We'd totally read your email on the air and reply to it as well. We're also streaming right now. If you're over on Twitch, go to twitch.tv, and you can search for In-Game Chat in the search bar. You'll be able to find us, watch us live while we broadcast, join in the chat room as well. Again, Discord, you can find that by going to our website, ingamechat.net. Scroll all the way down to the bottom, our links for Discord, our links for Twitch, all of our links that we have, they're all right there waiting for you. Do this real quick so I can sync up my audio later. And we have a special surprise today. Instead of jumping right into our video game talk, and well, I say video game talk, but talking about what we've played and everything like that, we are going to jump into, and I hope this is, correct. I'm making sure my buttons are pressed on the board and everything. I don't worry too much about it when Steve is there. It just works, but we'll find out. We are talking with, and you know what? I don't even know what the name of their development company is. All I know is that it's Katie and Micah. They are a husband and wife dev team, and they are joining us through Discord right now. Are you there? Can you hear us? Everything going okay?
Hey, Scott. Yep, we are here.
Wonderful. Fantastic. Glad that you, so you can hear me okay. Everything's working correctly.
Loud and clear.
Wonderful. Awesome. Do you have something I forgot to ask you? Do you have a name for your studio, for your company?
We do. This is the first game we're working on, so we don't have any prior games out yet, but we are called Sunshine Toys and Games because we're based out of Florida.
Oh, okay. You're over there in Florida. All right. Wonderful. I saw this post. It was a weird day. I say a weird day. It wasn't. It just started when I popped open Reddit and I saw an advertisement for a game called Car Park Capital or something, which was like RCT based. And when I say RCT, I am talking about Roller Coaster Tycoon for those who are listening. Yeah. Roller Coaster Tycoon, massive fan of that game way back when, probably is what really started my, I guess, passion for city builder type stuff. Because it was a way you could build a theme park and that sort of thing. And it was perfect. So I really enjoyed it. Anyway, so this game pops up and it's like, oh, wow, that looks very much aesthetically to Roller Coaster Tycoon. And I think it was even posted in maybe the Roller Coaster Tycoon subreddit. And so I was like, oh, that's cool. Didn't think anything of it. I was just like, I'll keep an eye on that. Anyway, I'm scrolling through and then Reddit likes to throw in other subreddits that you don't subscribe to just as a like, hey, you might be interested in this. Mm-hmm. Cozy Gamers came up and here is another Roller Coaster Tycoon aesthetic game called National Park Tycoon. And it's doing this. And I thought, man, two in one day. All right, fine. Let's see what's going on. And I reached out to them to do an interview with us to talk about this game that's coming up, this National Park Tycoon. And I hear a dog. I think I heard a dog. But so what's the background on the two of you, not only where you're coming from, but also the desire to make a game? Where did that come from?
Well, my husband, Micah, who is here as well, is an ex-EA employee. And so he's been in the gaming industry for a while, and it's very soul-sucking.
yeah, no, it is.
So he started this little company, Sunshine Toys and Games, and we got the idea for this particular game a few years back when we were in Rocky Mountain National Park, and we were just hiking, and I thought, wouldn't it be cool if there was a game where you build your own national park? And being a millennial who was obsessed with Roller Coaster Tycoon as well in my middle school years, that was the vibe that I wanted it to go for. So we started working on that, and here we are now. We just launched our Steam page, and it's starting to get the word out there about it.
Yeah. So, but I mean, okay. So how long did, and you had previous experience, not really game, was it game development? Not game development, was it?
Not game development. My experience is more in web development. So more like a JavaScript. This is actually a JavaScript based game. We didn't use a studio or not. We didn't use an engine to build it. So it will be playable in browser as well as downloadable on Steam.
Oh, neat. That's cool. How long did he work for? How long, Micah, I know you're there. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
There you are. Give me a chance to speak here. How long did you, how was EA your first game job, or what was the, what's your history with it?
I went to graduate school for game design and development at UCF. So I've been in the industry for about 15 years. I was at EA Sports for a few years working on Madden as a designer. Then started my own little company for a little while working on games, and we didn't really make any money, so we all kind of disbanded. And since then, I've just been on a, I worked at Disney for a little while, and then after that, I worked at Maximum Games. I was working on Maximum Football for a few years as the development director.
Yeah, I guess so. You're coming from sports, you go to sports, and now you're going to, what is the genre of this? It was a builder, city, I don't know, is there a name for this genre?
Yeah. I think it falls under City Builder. I think it kind of also falls under cozy gaming and simulation, management, anything like that. So there's a building aspect to it, and there's a management aspect to it. So you can build up your park with, you start with maybe a visitor center, and then you can add dining, restrooms, activities, hiking trails, viewpoints, anything you would find in a typical national park. But then, of course, things start getting a little chaotic as you're building. Maybe bears start coming onto your trails, or fallen branches block your path. So you need to manage everything, hire rangers, make sure that they keep everybody safe, clean everything up, and your park's being profitable and all that kind of stuff. So it's very similar to a classic Roller Coaster Tycoon type game in that sense.
Yeah. And how long have you guys been in development on this game?
About 9-10 months.
I think we started January, so yeah. Most of this year, I guess about 8-9 months now.
With a target of when for release?
We are hoping for by the end of the year. So we're going to get a demo out hopefully within about a month here, do some more play testing, and then hopefully end of the year launch.
Is it going early access, or is it going to launch right out?
No, we're just going to go straight to our full launch.
Okay, I didn't know. I know some things. It's not that I'm not a fan of early access. I think early access actually works for what it's meant to do. It's just I never jump in on early access games because for me, it's like when it's finished, that's when I'll play your game. You know, I don't want to, depending on the type it is, I don't want to play some of your game and then you add to it or take away from it or whatever the case may be, where what I just played could have been easier or more challenging or whatever the case may be from it. That's why I kind of want to get into it when it's done. And if it's story driven, then obviously no, wait until that's completely finished. So anyway, that's my point being, even if it was early access, I'd still would have my eye on this. I would just wait for it to get to its complete and final build of release. So when did you guys finally go up on Steam and like announce to the world?
It was just last week, maybe 8 or 9 days ago now. Okay. So we're just starting to get some marketing going for it now.
Can you explain, and I don't know if you guys can or not, but can you explain to me, and we see this a lot, specifically with Steam, whenever games are announced, the wholesome game devs or wholesome, whatever it is, the one they do during Summer of Games or whatever it's called.
Humble Bundle?
Wholesome...
Steam Fest or...
Wholesome Direct or whatever it's called. The Wholesome Games Direct or stuff like that. Regardless, anytime we're seeing games that are basically Steam released, indie especially, they push that wish list thing. What does that do for games on Steam?
I haven't been through it yet, but anytime you're part of anything like that, some kind of fest or promotional event, I think the more people view your game in the first couple days, the more Steam pushes it, and then the more wish lists you get. So a lot of games rack up most of their wish list like shortly before launch when they join the next fest or whatever is right before their launch. And I haven't experienced this, but I've heard that if you launch without some, it's like some pretty good wish list steam, then your launch ends up failing. So we're hoping to launch by the end of the year, but I guess if we don't get enough wish lists in time, we would keep on marketing until we feel like we have a good number of wish lists to convert to sales. Because once you launch, that's pretty much your biggest sales day. And after that, it's really hard to recover if you kind of fail your launch. But right. We'll see. We're learning as we go, too.
Yeah. So, yeah, forgive me if I'm asking questions that you guys may not know. Because, I mean, I'm asking because I don't know. I know that they push, a lot of companies push on that whole, like, you know, it'd be great if you wish list us on Steam. And I was curious as to what that must do. Obviously, it gives you, you know, more help from Steam to push the game. Mm-hmm. But for you guys, it gives you an idea of here's how many potential sales that I guess we could have with this game when we launch. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
Got you. Is there, and maybe it's too early to ask, but is there, how does the game work? Does it work a lot like Roller Coaster Tycoon where you play in scenarios? Or is it?
Yes.
Okay.
We modeled it pretty closely off Roller Coaster Tycoon. I personally haven't been a gamer since those days. I get really bad vertigo. I can't play 3D games or even watch people play 3D games. So the 2D isometric gaming space is kind of where it's at for me. So yes, we give you scenarios. So you get a pre-built land, and they are modeled after real national parks. And you have three objectives to meet in each of those lands. And once you meet them, you can unlock the next land.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question.
We tried to make it so that you can't really fail. Like, the objectives aren't time boxed. Like, you must do this by month three or something. It's just an objective you need to meet in whatever time it takes you to meet that objective. So even if you have some kind of disaster in your park, you always have time to recover from it and try and figure out how to make it better, whether it's a financial goal you're trying to meet or a safety score. Or whether it's welcoming some number of new deer to your park or something like that. I wanted it to not be something that you could fail, but if you take longer to reach your goals, then you play the game longer, and hey, we're happy with that.
Just side question. Can you pick up the people like you can in Roller Coaster Tycoon?
Yeah, you definitely can. You can pick them up and throw them in the water.
Chuck
and you
them
can
in
throw
the
them
lake.
In front of bears.
Yeah, oh, you can put them in front of.
Oh,
you can put them in the. You can put them in the path of the prey of dangerous animals and figure out what they're going to do. Okay.
You can. I believe the bears need to already be hungry. Like, the bears have a hunger level score, right?
Oh, yeah. So you can drop visitors in front of bears and cougars and wolves, and if they're hungry enough, then they'll the visitors will get into a little scuffle with the bears, and then they'll go missing.
Which I guess then reflect. I mean, does it work the same way when customers leave the park and they say, "Hey, I had a great time," or you know, my husband died by a bear mauling, and I'm never coming back to this place again. Does your park get a rating in that regard?
Yes, everything is very. All the guest behavior is very reflective of your park scores. So if your comfort score starts dropping, say you don't have enough benches or restrooms or something, people will start leaving saying, I'm not comfortable in this park, or there aren't enough food options for me, or this park feels very unsafe if people are going lost and going missing. So all the mechanics work together.
Yeah, so the park has a number of park attributes. So like nature, so like the ecology of the park, how much nature is in the park, how many trees, how many animals, what kind of, like, do you have mountains in the park, how much water. All this stuff creates the nature score in the park. There's a bunch of other scores that the park has. And, like, if a bunch of visitors start going missing, then your park safety score will drop. So a big part of the game is managing your park scores and trying to keep those up and keep your park nice and pristine. But the visitors also have their own attributes as well. So, like, a visitor will have, like, an excitement attribute and a toilet attribute and a food attribute. They have I think about 8 attributes, and those go up and down as they do different things, as they get hungry, as they get tired, as they're, you know, they're seeing that they're doing more activities or more going on trails that have high nature scores. then you'll see their nature score go up or their excitement score go up. You know, it really just depends on what they're doing.
Yeah, and can you name the families like you could in roller coaster? Like, you can give names to the people?
We haven't gotten that in detail. You can name the Rangers. But yeah, the people I would say have a little bit more personality than Roller Coaster Tycoon, because I think in RCT they were just named Guest 12, Guest 47.
They were, right? Yeah. And you could change those names, because I remember I put in a bunch of my friends and made specific cases where I followed that group around to see what my friends were going around riding and how they were feeling about stuff. It was just, it was part of the sim thing. It was fun to do. I think I could do that in... I think it's City Skylines as well. When I played that, I think I could change the name of some of the people that were there. And so I could just follow specifically. And I think you could favorite those people. So you had a little...
Ooh.
Well, you had... Yeah, the little ticker up at the top would tell you specifically what that person was doing or needed or was complaining about or having a tough time. You know, whatever the case may be, it would kind of keep you on track of that person. I don't know if... I can't remember. It's been a while since I played City Skylines, but... I think you could get stuff like that. I'm not saying, hey, does this have that in there? I was just curious if you could name your park guests like you could with Roller Coaster Tycoon. And something that we talked about yesterday, Katie, real quick was, and I don't know if you mentioned it to Micah, but I was asking if you could name the animals in the park.
It's a good idea. Right now you can.
We've talked about it in the past, and we kind of glossed over it because we were working on other stuff, but... You mentioned watching the trail cams and the wildlife cams from the Katmai, Alaska bears and how they all have names.
Yep.
And I think that's not a bad idea. Yeah, we don't have that. Like, there aren't that many animals, so you could name them all if you
wanted
to.
Well, the two that I noticed, and we talked about that, was the bears, because I watched the Katmai bears in Alaska, and then the eagles, because I watched Jackie and Shadow from Big Bear National Park. They're friends of Big Bear Cam there, where I was watching that, and she recently passed away. But obviously, if I have an eagle in the park and I can give them those names, I would absolutely love that. And even if I can't, I'll still just reference them as anytime I see them, as like, it's either Jackie or Shadow, regardless.
We were thinking people might get sad if their bear died. I mean, something.
Yeah, probably. But I think the next bear that walks in, you just like, okay, that's you get to wear the name now because he's gone. So I don't know. Just one of those.
We do have a like an animal rehabilitation program within the game. So
really?
If one of your types of animals becomes endangered or extinct, you can pay to rehab them and bring them back into your park. And because one of the more common comments that we get is that a tycoon kind of game feels antithetical to the mission of national parks, which is like preserve and protect the land, and not try and make as much money as possible.
Right. It was more geared towards the Roller Coaster Tycoon aesthetic, the similarities there, not the similarities of let's rake in a bunch of cash from our national park and overcharge these people. Yeah,
exactly.
I know.
So we do have, there is a balance that you need to keep within your park. The more you build up your park, the lower your nature score will go. So you can't just build every square inch of your park or it's going to fail. You need to keep a balance between the nature and preserving what's already there and the stuff that you build. So there's a balance in that regard. And, what else is there that you do to keep, to balance the nature, the animals?
The animals, the trash, that's
where introduce, or if you build a fishing activity, for example, for your visitors, you can choose to let them keep the fish they catch or release them back into the wild. If you let them keep their fish, then their excitement scores raise, increase more quickly. However, they start depleting the fish population in your park, which will remove a main food source for bears and wolves and other animals that eat the fish, and then they will start wandering onto your trails, stealing your visitors' food and creating a safety issue. So there's lots of things you have to balance.
There's like a whole like food chain type thing going on. So if you overbuild, then you'll kind of encroach on the animal's territory, and you'll see them start to die off. Like you'll see that the rabbits will start to hide wherever there's more people, and you'll see like the deer start to go around more people because they just by the nature of the game and how it's built and the programming that they'll go towards safer areas, which tend to be where there are more people and more rangers around. and the Rangers will scare off the, you know, they'll shoo off the predators. So what ends up happening is if you overbuild your park, then the bears, the predators, the cougars, they all end up starving to death because they can't really get to the prey as easily. So it's actually kind of it's very realistic where when you overbuild, you start to see all your animal numbers start to dwindle. If you let people just come in and fish and keep all the fish that they catch, then the fish population will dwindle, and then that causes the bears to dwindle. So everything sort of works together. Like even if you don't have enough grass or foliage in the game, then the deer won't have enough to eat, and you'll see their numbers start to dwindle. So you know, the whole little circle of life thing it works really well in the game.
No, that's fascinating. It's something I didn't even think about in the sense of, you know, that sort of thing where you can overbuild in your park. You can also deplete your food sources or maybe even your water source of pollution, things like that. I know in the parks, again, I have to relate it to Roller Coaster Tycoon. The only thing I'm familiar with in that regard. The cleanliness of your park is you know, that's it. You know, if there's a ton of people there, as long as you're keeping it clean, you know, you're raking in the money and you're building more stuff and improving other things. But it doesn't matter how much they eat. You know, it doesn't matter what you let them do, as long as you clean up after them or have enough resources for them to clean up after themselves, type of thing. And I didn't even consider that on a national park. I've never actually been to a national park, by the way. I don't believe I've ever been to a national park.
What's the closest one to where you live? You're in Alabama, right?
Yeah, and I want to say
you don't have a lot very close by then.
No, I don't know if Cheehaw is a national park.
I don't think so. I think probably the Texas ones and the Florida ones. Actually, maybe Smoky Mountain. Actually, yeah, probably Smoky Mountain is your closest one.
Right, yeah.
I think that's closer than Everglades.
But yeah, I don't really think I've ever been to a national park, which is interesting, but so.
Well, you can play one and feel like you're visiting one.
Yeah. I mean, I've wishlisted it as well, and I really hope you guys, reach your goal. I did want to touch on, and man, it's a touchy subject, but I figure it's something you guys are going to have to eventually talk about, or it's going to get raised up enough as it is. But on your Steam page, there is the disclaimer of generative AI that is used in your game. And to explain that, which, I mean, you can go ahead and do it, but to be honest, you're a two-person team trying to make a game in an age where the resources in order to do that cost a lot of money because AI is being used and raising the prices of things that you need in order to develop a game. But there's only two of you because of what you can afford. So you have to use the AI to help you build this game. Can you talk a little bit about the use of generative AI? What drew you to that? Why did you go through it that way? And what your goal is to hopefully get away from it if you can.
Without it, we couldn't have made this game. This is why we made this game now, and why we didn't start making it 4 years ago, because we didn't have these resources. We're not artists. We're more in the development, in the like the coding space. And I'll start off by saying I would love to be able to afford to hire a real artist. I'm not sure if we'll get there before launch. We have the disclaimer on our page does say if we sell well enough, we will hire the real artist. And once all the art is done, we'll release that new art as a patch to anyone who has already purchased the game. I'll say that there's a risk that we're taking because there's a vocal minority of people who are a part of this anti-AI sentiment because it takes artists or it takes jobs from real artists. And so we've been debating whether we hire the artist before or after launch. And people are saying, well, if you say you're not going to hire the artist until you have enough sales, then you might not get the wish list that you need to have a successful launch to afford that artist in the future. Mm-hmm. So maybe you should hire them now so that you get the wish lists in time to replace the art before launch. I think from what I've seen, that if you make a good game, people will buy it whether you use AI art or not. A lot of, I think most of the general population that buys these games don't really care unless it's glaringly obvious that you've used that the AI art is just sloppy if the game is good. And I think I'm biased, of course, but I think once you just jump into the game, you quickly forget that the art is AI because it just becomes so addicting to start building stuff and start reacting to things. You're just like, oh my God, I need to build a restroom here. I need to hire a ranger. And you couldn't care less what it looks like at that point, you know?
Yeah, and our goal is to replace every art asset in the game that is AI art with actual authentic artist created artwork. You know, as soon as we sell a certain number or make enough money, basically, then we're going to immediately hire an artist to start replacing any AI art, and then we're going to release that for free to anybody who's already bought the game.
How much does the game cost? Because I haven't seen that either. Do you have a price point yet?
We're aiming for around $15 with a discount at launch.
Okay. And the launch, of course, later this year, by the end of the year, is that what you're aiming for?
By the end of the year, yep.
I mean,
was I about to say about the AI again?
Oh, yeah, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, we do have an artist who's done a few assets for our game, like the UI modals, for example, that you see everywhere. They're so prevalent, we thought that would be worth hiring the artist for the main menu, background screen, and our Steam capsule art. And the ironic thing is, people have commented on some of our videos and stuff, like, the game looks beautiful, you just need to replace that menu screen, that AI art that you used for the menu screen. And then we're having to say, that's the only thing that's real art. Like, yeah. So I think people do have a hard time distinguishing sometimes the difference.
And I mean, if we had hired an artist for all of the animations that we have, just the animations alone that are in the game, it would have been like $25,000-$30,000 at this point. That's just a rough estimate. It could have been more, it could have been slightly less. But just the amount of work we would have needed an artist for. So it's not an issue. It's not a situation where like AI is taking a job away from an artist. This just wouldn't have been a project. Like, we never would have got this far without having the generative AI. We would have been using just, you know, like gray boxes for everything and gray and blue boxes and circles and triangles for all of the assets in the game. But instead, with the AI, we can at least generate prototype art, you know, art that looks decent enough to where it gets the point across.
And we are fairly skilled with things like Photoshop and things. So you're not going to see like buildings with three chimneys and like, you know, like obvious glaring AI slop. We tried to make it so that they all look like real buildings. They're the correct isometric perspective. So we heavily edited them ourselves. But it's pretty amazing the tools available to us with AI now. Like the animations in particular, we were able to find a workflow where we generated a still image with ChatGPT and then used Grok to turn it into a video and then take that video and cut different frames out of it to create a sprite sheet to play an animation. And all this wouldn't be possible without AI. It's really quite amazing what you can do these days. But of course, nothing beats a true artist.
No, absolutely not. And I also understand that portions of sales of this are going back into like a national park fund or something like that. What's going on?
Yes, the National Park Foundation. I would love to support. I have a cousin who is a superintendent of one of America's national parks. And so I've been going to national parks my whole life. I'm trying to hit them all. I think I've done about 33 out of 63. I love them. I think they're America's greatest treasure. They're so beautiful. They make me think, why do I ever need to travel outside the country? There's so much to see here. So I would love for a portion of our proceeds to benefit them.
All right. Well, you've been to that many national parks. What is your favorite national park then out of the ones you've been to?
Glacier National Park in Montana, close to Canada, is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Okay.
It's all you ever talked about.
Just think of the most picturesque mountain lake that you see in the computer screen landscapes, you know, and that's Glacier National Park. Breathtaking.
Well, we do appreciate you guys joining us for this and to talk about your game and to just be as honest as you could about the AI use. It's understandable in regard of what's going on and the fact that you're just a two-person team trying to make a game. And I wish you guys the best of luck with it. I hope you get the sales that you need to kind of turn around and put that in, you know, actual, you know, an artist rendition of all that stuff to make that happen. And I just hope it's really successful for you guys, because it looks wonderful, looks fun. It takes me, the nostalgia factor on it for me, going back to RCT, is just way up there for it. And the fact is you can play with animals, or like say play with animals, but you know what I mean. You have animals in your park and let them play with the people. I really, really enjoyed it. So thank you guys for coming on, and best of luck to you. When's the next that we're going to hear about this game?
Well, we're posting stuff nearly every day, so I'm sure you'll see more about it out there. And then hopefully the next big announcement will be the release of our demo in, say, about a month or so.
Okay, so the game will get a demo, and that's fantastic. Well, Micah and Katie, thank you again so much for being on the show. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you for having us, Scott.
You guys have a wonderful day, and we'll talk to you again soon, closer to release.
Yep. See ya.
See ya. Bye-bye. All right. And the name of that game was National Park Tycoon. You can find it on Steam. Wishlist it. Take a look at it. I mean, if you're interested in it, go ahead and wishlist it. But take a look. National Park Tycoon. I really should have hit them up about releases on other platforms. I think they were looking at doing a mobile release. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this is as far as they're getting right now with what they've got, because more money for a console or a Switch or something like that type mm-hmm. of release. So. But yeah, you can find that on Steam, National Park Tycoon. Okay, we're going to come back and get the show started proper here in just a bit. We have music from... This is weird. I think I meant to write Sleep Awake, but I wrote Skeep Awake. In other words, S-K-E-E-P, but I think I meant Sleep Awake is the name of this game.
Yeah, just a type.
I know, big, you know, fat thumbed it. It is Sadis of the Hush. That is the name of the track. So anyway, we're going to play this, and we'll be right back with more of In-Game Chat right after this. Welcome back into In-Game Chat. Music here from a game called Routine. This is called Blocks. Welcome back to the show. RJ, what have you played, my friend?
I did get back to the Division 2. There's a new incursion, Broken Rain, that I was interested in looking at. I tried getting into it, but, you know, that's a team-based thing, and I found out the hard way. I mean, you can do it solo, but you got to have a very... very significant damage based build to do so. I watched a playthrough of it, and after trying it myself, and I really need to get to work on a healer build in that game, you know, a support person, because in the team based games like that, I've always fashioned myself as getting the support person, you know, healing and buffing and debuffing enemies, things of that nature. And there's a build that can do
that.
That's
what you played in Call of Duty. That's what you played in City of Heroes,
City of Heroes,
right?
Yeah. I did that. So the support person, you know, that was something I've always liked playing as. So that was something I need to build for in the Division 2. But the thing is, though, the game has been out so long. I think we're in year 8, season 2 right now. So there's been so much stuff going on, so much things have added. And I don't know if I'm built up enough to get those items. I mean, I'm gonna have to build up my character to be able to get the stuff that I need to become a good healer and support person in that game. So it's gonna be a little work to do. I mean, when you're at level like 350 something, and you see people in there with at the 24,000 level. Yeah, you got some work to do. I mean, it's possible, but it may take a little while. More Virtua Fighter. Just had a league session today. Played two league matches. Got third place in one, and got fifth place in the other. So, you know, still doing pretty good there. And I like my results so far. Still need to improve on some stuff, but I'm getting there pretty regular. Just got to get some more matchup knowledge.
Yeah,
especially against a couple of players. Other than that, I did finally give Densha Attack a try.
Oh, did you?
I finally tried playing that. Thing is, though, the tutorial, I had to play a couple of times to get the gist of it, because that tutorial goes pretty fast.
Yeah.
And I had to play it multiple times to get the gist of it. See, seems to me I have an issue with judging when to do use the left stick to switch between tracks,
mm-hmm.
and determining when I have to jump before switching tracks. I keep tapping left thinking I'm going to hit the track. No, you got to jump first. So I keep mixing that up and messing up, because the tutorial takes you through from point A to point B, learning everything you can. And I'm trying to learn, like, when to hit the brakes on a turn, and mm-hmm. when to let go of the thing. I know let go of the thing at the very center of the gauge, and you get a perfect drift around the tracks of that thing. So it's just going to take a little effort in getting the hang of the controls down. And then I saw the trick list.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, that's just simple. 180s, 270s. Mm-hmm. Maybe I didn't see any 360s. That's what got me. I thought I'd see a 360 in there. I saw a 270.
Yeah.
From down, swinging around the left. That's a 270. Kind of like a screwdriver in Street Fighter for Zangief's Street.
I think there's a lot of different. There's a ton of different.
Oh, yeah. There's a ton of tricks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Involving arcs and circles and things of that nature, up and down. Up, down, swinging around, that mm-hmm. type of thing to get the high-level tricks and everything like that. But that's why I was thinking of Jet Set Radio, because when you spray paint the graffiti, there was a lot of those 270, 180s, and things of that nature. You had to do it in a chain, though.
Yeah.
And I think the tricks are, if you do it right, if you get the timing right, you can do those same type of motions in a chain. So I don't know if you can do the up, down, 180 type thing and chain that with something else, and maybe you can. I mean, I haven't seen it done. I haven't given it a shot, but I think if you get the time right, you can get a whole bunch of things, a whole bunch of tricks in a row, depending on how much airtime you get jumping from between track to track.
How many levels after the tutorial?
I mean, I tried to do the one after it, but I kept messing up all the time because I couldn't remember how to do the track switching and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I started playing the tutorial over and over and over again until I got the gist of it. So I haven't really got past that part.
Okay.
Now, after I get when I get the controls down, then I'll give it a shot.
Okay.
But other than that, I didn't play much of it, but yeah, it's just getting the controls down before I start going into it seriously.
Yeah, I should go back into it and do the same thing, because it's been a minute since I played it. By now, I'd need a refresher on the on the tutorial. I only really played the one track, but mm-hmm. I know the tracks are past the tutorial. The tracks are very. I mean, it gets. They get crazy.
Yeah, it's a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, blowing the horn to make things happen. Okay, the jumping, the switching tracks, the mid-air track switch, the drifting around turns, mm-hmm. selecting there's forks in the track, which one you want to go on. The tricks, of course. The slam, because if you jump off something and it's too high, you got to slam down onto the track. I mean, did you do it too early or did it too late? You know, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on here. It's simple to execute. Don't get me wrong. It's nothing. The only thing complicated is the tricks. Other than that, it's very simple inputs on what to do mm-hmm. to get these functions. It's just remembering all of them. Because like I said, the tutorial went really, really fast. So, in my case, I had to play it multiple times to get everything down. But, I guess if you play it, long enough, expose yourself to it quick enough, it'll become muscle memory and you'll get the hang of it.
You plan on putting more time into it then?
Yeah, I'll put more time into it.
Okay, wonderful.
Yeah, I will.
As for me, it's just Marvel Snap. That's it. I didn't, I played some more Spider-Man. Spider-Man 2, anyway, I should say. Spider-Man 2 on PlayStation 5.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is like 3 years old, so I don't know that I'm spoiling anything. Everybody pretty much knows Venom is in the game.
No, I think there's a limit, like what, a year?
Yeah, I still
after a year.
Yeah, I still haven't beaten it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I really can't spoil you on the game itself, but I mean, obviously Venom is in the game. There are, you know, the black suit's in it. It's part of it. Yeah. And Venom is absolutely in the game. I finally got to the story where Venom is a character in the game and not just you wearing the black suit. So I was able to get the black suit off of me, which the whole thing of like ramping up to the reason, you know, it's always been the story of Venom has always been the same. We have seen it's essentially seeing the way that Peter Parker gets his powers or the way that Batman's parents die. It's or Superman leaves, you know, Kal-El leaves Krypton because of the parent thing.
Yeah.
The origin of these characters has been done and done and done and done and done and done.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily something that I need to see again or go through again because we know the story.
Yeah.
He gets the black suit. It changes his emotions. They make him into this horribly written annoying person is the best way I can say that on radio where I can't say certain words. But it just, you know, but the way that they wrote that in there to make him that way was just, it was, everything is yelling. Like he yells at everything.
The spurned ex-partner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He just yells at everything, or everything is in this gruff voice of like, yeah, that's because I'm mad and evil now, and I'm whatever, you know. Oh, you're not yourself. Well, it's because I talk, you know, he has this kind of voice in the beginning, and it's very smooth and nice, and then as it becomes whatever with Venom, it gets really more like, yeah, I've got to go, and blah, blah, blah. Gets very grovelly and lower and deeper and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
To be more evil, I don't know. But, nobody's really done the origin different. Not necessarily that they need to, but you can skip all that because it's suit finds Peter, bonds with Peter, makes him evil. He gets rid of that. Suit finds somebody that hates Peter or Spider-Man or whatever and bonds with that, and then it becomes the Venom. That's just how it works.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, got past that part, and I'm really thinking, okay, this is the part of the game where they rush the ending. So Venom is now out there, so at some point I just got to go and fight him, and this is how the whole thing will end. No, it doesn't. And I don't necessarily know that they've rushed the ending because I only just now got to the part where Venom is actual character, which you get to play as in the game, by the way, for just a little bit. You get to do a boss fight kind of thing, and you get to just kind of go nuts with the character. But eventually you shift back to playing as Spider-Man, and there are still activities for me to do. I talked about this last week, where if I wasn't the way that I was, where I have to clear everything out before I move on, my city would be littered with stuff to do. Should be. Littered with things to do. As it stands now, I'm just knocking them out as they show up. And I realized when it happened, especially when I took on one of these things last weekend, a new thing to do in the city, because I've unlocked Venom now, I realized when I went and started doing this, I thought, oh, man, this is just another way for them to extend the length of the game. This is boring and pointless. I don't like it. It's just, again, it's just another way.
And you recognize it immediately.
Absolutely, yeah. Immediately, because there's these sets of things that I, or sets of places around the city where when I go to them, I start, it's a mission, but it's not really a mission. It is a timed mission. In other words, I have to set a bomb, essentially, on these nests of Venom spawns or whatever they are. And I have to protect that for, I think, 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And you are just completely overrun. They can attack the bomb, and if the bomb loses health or whatever the thing is, then you've failed. If you lose health and die, then you've failed. So you have to protect it for, like, 2 solid minutes. And it just annoyed me. First off, I don't like missions like that.
Yeah.
And secondly, this just feels like something that's extending the length of the game.
Yeah, I think that reminds me of a line in, I think it was a Hulk comic, and it was a battle between Hulk and the Abomination.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a line there I've always remembered. It said, "If you think 2 minutes isn't a long time, count it out 1 second at a time.
Yeah.
And it was talking about the beating that Abomination was taking. It could have been 2 minutes. And then that line came up, and it really stuck out to me. But, yeah, 2 minutes, having to deal with constant pressure of trying to protect things and keep yourself healthy and things like that, it can get a little hectic and tedious after a while.
I realized the length of time when I started working in radio. Mm-hmm. 2 minutes is a wonderful amount of time to have. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, I could do a lot with 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I can make stuff happen in 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that's the same point. It's like, God, 2 minutes is such a long time to fend off these enemies who are on par with you as far as like some abilities and strengths and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You're not fighting just like regular old civilians. You're fighting Venom Spawn people or whatever.
Yeah, these ain't one-shot wonders.
Yeah. I ended up looking at a video that was some of the game, and I honestly thought what they were covering was stuff I had already gone through. But no, they went further, and I realized, oh, God, this still has to happen before I even get to the end of the game? My God. So apparently I still have a good ways to go in the game, unless, of course, they rush it after the next story mission. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But because I finished my side quest first before I move on, it's going to be a minute before I find that out. So we'll see about that. But that's it. I did pick up 2 new games this week because they were doing the Pinball Fest thing. It was, I think it's, and AC Wraith will help me out on this. I think it's Yoki's Island Express. I would say it's Yoshi's Island Express, but that can't be Yoshi because that would be too much of a similarity to Mario stuff. Mm. But it's somebody's Island Express. And it's all pinball related. I think I had it on the Switch at one point.
Is it Yoku?
Maybe that's what it is.
Yoku's Island Express.
Yeah, okay. It's all pinball.
Okay.
And it's Yoku's Island Express. It's all pinball. It's all, you know, a lot of fun.
A platform pinball adventure game.
Exactly.
Okay.
And it was like $2.
Oh, okay.
When it was on sale. And so, and it was Steam Deck verified, which I thought even better, because I can play it on the Steam Deck.
Okay. Looks like I got a 10 out of 10 on Steam, 4.6 out of 5. Yeah, highly rated. Looks like
It was very well reviewed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, absolutely good. And then I also picked up, it's called Space Rock Breaker, I think, mm-hmm. or something. Is it Space Rock Breaker? Maybe you're looking that up. Space Rock. Mm-hmm. Oh. This is, yeah, Space Rock Breaker. That is the name of it.
Okay.
It's an indie incremental game that was released in December of 2025. And again, it's like $3 as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Hmm.
And I just thought, it's got good ratings and it's a cheap price, so I'll just go ahead and grab it. I haven't played them, but I bought them.
I was about to say, it looks like Atari's Asteroids.
Kind of, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But so, but the ship is moving, so you know how bad that was in the original game when your ship started moving.
Yeah. Anyway, we're coming up on a break here, but when we come back, we will dive into the news. And I mean, I'm not sure how much there is to say about the news of the week, which is basically the Grand Theft Auto leaks that have been steadily happening every single day this week. We've gotten one or two new clips every day this week from somebody who's got a copy of the game. Could be an old build, we don't know, but is out there like giving us 1 minute to 2 minute feeds of gameplay of different things. Have you been following along with those?
I've been seeing bits and pieces here and there. I mean, it's been,
yeah, I don't know, man. Your car keeps, something's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Figure that out later.
I don't know if that means the battery's low or if there's some kind of, I don't know what that's telling you.
Don't know. I have to figure that out.
His car alarm keeps going off out in the parking lot. And we thought it was his keys pressing against the alarm thing in his pocket. But now he's got him just sitting out on the desk and it just went off again.
It goes off again, yeah.
So I'm not sure what that is, but.
I was just saying, I'm seeing bits and pieces of stories here and there, like a group took responsibility, then a different group took responsibility, and more stuff is coming out. But the thing that sticks out to me is that they're being really trying to be really silent about this. They don't want to put too much fuel on fire. And then
Rockstar hasn't said, they had not said anything about it until I think just yesterday or Thursday or Friday. I can't remember when it was that they finally subpoenaed a couple of these places that are, they're not necessarily posting it, but the guy is posting it to those places. And they're subpoenaing, so we'll go over some of that. Here to come in just a bit for you when we come back. So anyway, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we'll hit that up. We've got music here. We are in, I think, October of last year, I believe, maybe November. No, we're in November now because this is Metroid Prime 4 that we're talking about. It's the main theme for that game. I believe, actually, that came out in December. We may be in December now. Anyway, we'll be right back with more of In-Game Chat right after this. Welcome back into In-Game Chat. That is music from Octopath Traveler Zero. I didn't know they had done a Zero. I knew they did two, but one and two, but I didn't know they did a Zero. But anyway, that's the main theme from Octopath Traveler. Welcome back into the show real quick, saying hello to Dave and his dog Axe. Hi, Axe. I don't know if Axe can hear us. I know that they're watching. Hey, Axe. Hey, buddy. See if he responds to that. I'm curious. Anyway, welcome back to the show. So, yeah, all week we've been seeing GTA 6 leaks. And again, we don't think this is a build that is something that is going to represent necessarily the final build of the game. I'm not sure what would need to get polished or anything like that. I have no idea of... the age of the build we're seeing. But what we are seeing are leaks of the game. We are seeing the game itself being played. Now, of course, on the 27th, what's the 27th? Whatever it is that Netflix is doing that big reveal. Whenever that is, I don't remember when it's happening, but it's happening this week. On Netflix.
August 27th at 3 o'clock Eastern.
Okay, on the 27th. That is when they're doing their big GTA reveal on Netflix. And then that's a six-hour exclusivity window.
Mm-hmm.
What time did you say it was?
3 o'clock Eastern.
Okay, so 2 o'clock our time. And then 6 hours from there would put us at what, 8 o'clock,
yeah.
I think? So 8 p.m. is when it'll get... I say that, but we figure this thing's going to be on places that you can watch it almost immediately when it's when it's done.
Yeah.
So...
Someone's streaming it.
Yeah, good luck enforcing that. But still, regardless, it doesn't matter. It's interesting, though, that we are getting leaks like this while... they've put basically the big gameplay reveal of it kind of behind a paywall, if you think about it, with Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you want to see what this game looks like, subscribe to Netflix, and you can watch it immediately or wait 6 hours afterwards and then watch it after that, which is fine. But I don't remember this ever being done before, where they have kind of put something like that behind an exclusivity type thing for just revealing the gameplay game.
Well, like this is GTA 6.
But it's
GTA. Yeah, it's one of the most hyped games. So a whole bunch of new stuff that we've never seen before is going to be attributed to this game.
Yeah.
I mean, as weird as it sounds, I mean, the amount of money you pay for a 6-hour, if it is that, exclusivity on this thing, when all someone has to do is stream it, and that's all she wrote.
Several new video clips of what really does look like actual GTA 6 footage leaked online and began to circulate rapidly. The clips appear to be coming from a website called CyberLeak and include footage of driving, the main character Jason playing basketball, and what could be the game's entire map. It's a pretty brutal leak, especially just days before the big Netflix-hosted gameplay reveal. But apart from the gameplay itself, what's interesting about this is the group itself and what it claims to represent. The CyberLeak website contains a lengthy manifesto railing against the rise of monetization schemes in video games, such as live service titles, the selling of digital licenses to games instead of actual ownership, locked content on discs under the guise of DLC, and games being shut down entirely. Every year, anti-consumerism tightens its grip, and every year, gamers get less for what they pay, says the website. CyberLeak claims it's raising funds for a secret project that it won't disclose and that it lists three commandments it expects video game publishers to adhere to. It claims that if a publisher breaks one, it will target them and will not stop until they issue a public statement and apology with a concrete commitment to be better. Words are not enough. Restitution is mandatory. It's from those commandments that we can maybe piece together why CyberLeak appears to have targeted GTA 6 specifically. One of the commandments does not appear to apply to the game, at least not yet or not publicly. That's number three, which calls out a need for offline fallback states for single-player content in games so that single-player games cannot become unplayable when the servers are shut off. We don't know one way or the other how this impacts GTA 6, but suffice to say, it doesn't appear to be any danger of having its single-player campaign shut down anytime soon. Commandment 2 is a prohibition against the fake single-player DLC, or including content in-game and a game at launch, and then requires an additional purchase to unlock it. This could be an issue that CyberLeak has taken with GTA 6 specifically, though it's a bit murky. It launches with a ton of extra vehicles, cosmetics, a salon, and other bits and bobs locked behind the Ultimate Edition, which costs 20 more for the regular one. When someone pays $70 for a game, they bought the data, CyberLeak writes. All of it. Selling them a file that flips locked equals true to locked equals false for a single-player mission, character, weapon, or story chapter is charging them twice for the same product. If this is, in fact, CyberLeak's issue, they're going to have a hell of a time going after everyone who does this. But it's really Commandment 1, which is the most easiest accusation to point at GTA 6, and it's the whole situation of digital pre-orders. No consumer shall pay for a game through digital storefronts before release and independent review. Physical pre-orders for tangible media remain permitted. Pre-orders were not created for gamers. They were created because physical discs had manufacturing limits. In digital distribution, there is no inventory. There is no stock shortage. A digital copy cannot sell out. Yet publishers kept the pre-order system and stripped away its only consumer benefit. Now, gamers pay early and receive nothing in return except a countdown timer and a cosmetic skin. If publishers want revenue before launch, they can press discs, print boxes, put them on shelves, earn that money through physical production. And that's literally what GTA 6 is doing, taking digital pre-orders. There's no physical edition of the game at launch. There's not going to be a physical edition of the game, so far as we know. No possibility for physical ones. It's also possible it's a combination of both Commandment 1 and 2 that is making them angry, especially given the recent news that the $100 digital-only Ultimate Edition of GTA 6 is being pre-ordered far, far more than the regular $80 version. But they've appeared to have targeted Rockstar explicitly due to the high profile. If CyberLeak can reach Rockstar, no one is safe. This is a message to all big corporations. Behave or be the next target. CyberLeak will continue to disrupt their operations until they issue a public statement, an apology with a concrete commitment to fix the harm they caused. No private negotiations, no quiet settlements. The public sees it, or the leaks do not stop. At the time of this article, they had not... Rockstar had not, or Take-Two, had not done anything about it, had not brought it up. They haven't even posted on social media since the whole leak thing had ever began. But yeah, we got a full map, which it's a big map. The one that impressed me most, and I've watched all of them, but I think the one that impressed me most and likely impressed everybody else most was the, did you see the one where he was in the plane?
Mm-mm.
Flying over the city?
Mm-mm.
Just, man, it was wonderful to see. You know, I had forgotten what a GTA map looked like from above type of thing. I'd forgotten, you know, a lot of, by the way, a lot of the leaks, some of them when they involved cars kind of ended with him driving towards a helicopter and then stopping before getting out and getting into the helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always like, oh, get in the helicopter and fly. Just go fly. Anyway, finally released one where he's in a plane, like a crop duster type plane or whatever, flying over, I guess it's Vice City, downtown, whatever it is. Because it's a big metropolitan area. And I'm just like, this looks great. Don't know about all those buildings. Can you go into them? I don't know. Specific ones, probably. But just looked really, really good. Which, you know, what do you expect from you know, a GTA thing? A lot of people look at it and say, oh, it's just GTA 5 with better graphics. I mean,
a 13-year-old game, yeah, you better have better graphics.
Yeah, it's going to look better. And, yeah. I mean, GTA 5 was just GTA 4 with better graphics.
Yeah,
I
think about it. I've said it before. At this day and age, a AAA title, you better have good graphics. There's really no excuse for you to not have good graphics. So,
yeah.
Or a AAA title.
But, yeah, they released a new one today. The one they released today, I don't know if you've seen the one they released today.
Mm-hmm.
It was released not too long ago, actually, before we came on the air.
Yeah.
He walks into a strip club. And you get to see whatever, the population of the interior of a business type of thing.
Trying to think if it's like the one in the actual trailers that
I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at those trailers to see.
It was a pink and black motif.
I mean, it's dark inside the club, yes. And there's lighting. And I mean, you can look at that, and that's more of what I'm looking at. First off, the whole activity of going in there looked boring. There was not, unless a mission requires you to go in there.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed
meh.
Really, yeah, very meh.
Yeah.
But the interesting things were the lighting effects, because you've got a dark room, but you do have lights that are kind of either moving or flashing or turning on or turning off, and so you get some idea of the lighting effects that are going
on. So it's like the nightclub in GTA Online.
Yeah.
It's you can set the aesthetic. You can set the way the light rigs work.
I don't know if you can do that. He didn't show any of that. I'm just talking about how the lighting worked in the game itself.
Yeah, I'm just saying the aesthetic of the nightclub in GTA is pretty much similar like that. Mm-hmm. You got a dark room with a bunch of lights going on the way you set it up.
Yeah.
And it can be like flashing or rolling images and things like
and
that.
And those cast shadows, and then your NPCs cast shadows from the lights and everything else. And so that was something to look at that was really, really cool as far as how the lighting for the game works also. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of the things they noticed was because in it, he pops up his inventory wheel and scrolls through a few things. One is like just your fist, I guess, is to use.
Empty-handed.
Empty-handed melee combat.
Mm-hmm.
The other one was a fishing rod. And it's like, oh, okay. There's a fishing rod in our inventory now.
Mm-hmm.
Which likely means at some point, anytime we want to,
it's Florida.
Find some water and go fishing.
Yeah,
which was also great to think about as well. So, but the one in the plane, I mean, it wasn't very long, but the one in the plane was really, really that one I liked,
mm-hmm.
and kind of got me back into it. Of like, oh man, that's right. Yeah, I can't wait to just go around and do my own thing. And by the way, after those leaks, the so-called, this is from Destructoid, it says the so-called hacker even claims to have the entire game on their machine. I think what we have, or at least what a lot of people have come to the conclusion is that this is running off PC, which likely it would have to be, given somebody has that code or whatever, because I'm pretty sure it was developed on PC and then move towards doing, or I think, to the console releases and then whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Naturally, the market panicked and started selling off Take-Two Interactive stock, leading to a massive loss in valuation, priced around $2.8
billion. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Take-Two lost some $15.29 in value per share for a grand total of $2.83 billion in decreased valuation. While Take-Two Interactive's market cap remains quite strong at over $43 billion, this nevertheless represents a 5% drop caused by a single leak, you know, one single person, group, whatever, mm-hmm. that is posting these videos cost a $2.83 billion decrease in valuation. That's mm-hmm. that's remarkable to me. You know, if anything, I would think it would bump things up to say, look, it's showing this off. More people are excited for the game because you guys aren't doing anything to promote it. Rockstar hasn't released a trailer for this thing in over a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when they
then again, with all the hype, they don't have to.
I mean, they don't, but people want more, you know?
Yeah,
I,
yeah, always leave them wanting more. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get that. Yeah, yeah.
But you don't have, but I'm just saying, it's GTA 6. You could show us a minute and a half to 2 minutes, not even just of gameplay, but of another trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And people are still going to want more, and that's fine. But at least you've driven up that stuff yourself. You've released it yourself. You've done it yourself. You've stirred the pot, I guess you could say, to get people back into the frenzy of, oh, yeah, GTA 6. But you haven't. You've done nothing in over a year for this. I know a lot of other people have done the math or have gone back and looked at when we got video for GTA 5, when we got video for GTA 4.
Yeah, I've seen
they've
that.
Calculated all this stuff and said, you know, this is no different than anything else that they've done. But going over a year without releasing another trailer of any kind, giving us a release date, giving us a pre-order date, still not releasing anything like footage or anything like that. When somebody does, like obviously this guy is doing, people latch onto it. They look at it, they analyze it, which is exactly what they're going to do when you release your thing from Netflix or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll also be interesting to see what we get out of that Netflix thing, which, by the way, I think somebody was able to, I think it was the BBC had a statistics or something for what's coming up and listed it as being about 30 minutes long. Now, I don't know if that's going to be 30 minutes of straight gameplay that we're getting.
No.
I don't know if it's going to be a 30-minute thing where developers talk about it. But now Rockstar, normally when they do these things, it can be a 15 to 20-minute video. 30 minutes is not out of the question of... Jeez, it scares me every time it happens. I don't know what's going on with your car. Anyway, they have, in the past, released these long-form videos with a narrator talking about the game itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's different gameplay mechanics that we have put into the game this time. You know, you can do this or you can go fishing or whatever the case may be. I don't know, but it's not unlike them to release stuff like that officially.
Mm-hmm.
They just haven't done it. It's just been, and again, to your point, they don't necessarily need to. It doesn't, they could never release anything since and people will still pick up the game and buy it. That's going to happen. It'll still be absolutely massively successful.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys found a way to release whatever it is that they're releasing. They're honestly, they ask for donations and I have no idea. It's all crypto stuff. I have no clue.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe have made some money off of it. I don't necessarily care either way. I'm not putting my money into it. It's been fun to see the leaks. But it's not going to hurt them if these guys think that they're doing anything. I mean, other than losing the valuation of stock for the company, they're not doing anything to hurt the sales of the game. If anything, they're helping to increase sales of the game, or at least helping to keep people talking about the game more so than they would be without this footage. They were going to talk about it anyway. But now that we have footage of this, we can talk about the lighting effects. We can talk about the driving mechanics. We can talk about the fact that your car needs fuel. Your car will run out of gas. You have to go to gas stations and fill up your car. Yeah. Micromanaging, right?
Yep.
Yeah. You have to go to the gas station and fill up your car. By the way, at a gas station, and that was something else. He pulled into a gas station. He didn't have to get out. Thank God they're not throwing in animations of us filling up our car. Mm-hmm. But when you pull into a gas station, you have the option to, well, you have two options, at least that we saw so far, refuel and repair. So you can, and you can do both. Repair costs a certain amount. Refueling costs a certain amount, that sort of thing. But gas stations will be needed for your vehicles. They will run out of gas. I have no idea about like anything else in that regard. I doubt that they need your brakes checked or anything like that. I don't think that has to be a, I don't think they go that far with it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be like an all-in-one. You can repair your car, customize your car, change the paint. Is it pay and spray with the gas station attached, or
true?
Is it something else?
How do you lose wanted level? You know what helps you with your wanted level? I don't know in that regard. Probably something that we're going to find out come the 27th when they release their video. Unless this guy goes nuts and just gives us a massive long form video of the game. So far, by the way, no spoilers. They have not talked about story missions or anything like that. And who knows on the build that he's got if there are story missions with what he's playing. This could be the sandbox build of just like, here's the city, go out, do stuff. You know, because I don't think we've seen any story mission type stuff, nor have we seen anything on the screen in the UI that mentions, you know, go here and see somebody or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
I don't think we're seeing any of that either. So, but yeah, the leaks keep coming. Like I said, we got two new clips today. There could be more clips on the way. In fact, I'll check during the break here to see if there's any more news about any more leaks. But, you know, there's that as well. So, anyway, we'll come back. We've got an update on the, if you remember last week when we talked about Saber Interactive firing their writer and hiring ChatGPT to finish the writing of it. We have an update on that story to tell you about. What else do we have? Just looking through, just seeing if there's anything else. A lot of the GTA stuff, yeah. We'll go through it, and then there's some shorter stories to hit up as we wrap up the show here. But we'll be right back with more of In-Game Chat in just a bit. Music here from a game called Skate Story. The name of this track is called Dream of Tomorrow. We'll be back with more of In-Game Chat right after this.
Evacuate when convenient.
Welcome back to Endgame Chat. This is music here from Let It Die. Let It Die Inferno. This is the Dream Seeker boss battle music here for that one. No new leaks in the amount of time that we've been on the air for GTA 6, but there probably will be something either tomorrow or Monday, I'm sure. They'll just keep throwing stuff out there. I have no idea what or what the next one might be, but just more GTA 6 footage, I guess, still to come. Hey, going back to the Saber situation that we talked about, he has now apparently released an apology to Stella Sacco, the writer at the center of the rideshare simulator AI controversy, after publicly saying he'd have been happy to replace her with AI. Sacco shared the news in a statement sent to Eurogamer and posted on her Blue Sky account saying, to her great surprise, she'd received a long email from Matthew Karch overnight in which he apologized unreservedly for the awful way he spoke about her in the press. She has not shared the email herself. She did say the email's full text will stay between us. I'm not that kind of girl, but I have confirmed it was from him. According to her, Matthew Karch said that he regretted escalating the row and how people online had subsequently spoken about her. She was careful to draw a line, though, between accepting the apology and being swayed by it. Quote, I'm not worried about being called slurs by random commenters. That's every day for me, but it stunk to have my skill and reputation built of 20 years in games publicly maligned by someone with institutional power. Sacco also pushed back on the suggestion once she said Karch had helped fuel that going public with this dispute means that she must love drama or be hard to work with, pointing out that bad treatment is common across the games industry and she's simply more willing than most to call it out. She reiterated, if I can say that correctly, that she stood by her account from the start and said that the apology does not change her stance on the use of AI in games. Matt and I obviously differ on this, and as a CEO, the consequences of its use fall on him and unfortunately also on his employees. She said she was accepting the apology. Apologies are simply in too short a supply these days to spurn one when it's not when it's offered. Adding that, God willing, this is the last statement I'll need to make about this. He also made a post on LinkedIn saying, I've had an insightful week reflecting on the unwritten rules and expectations placed on modern CEOs. This is going to be all lawyer speak here of like, here's what you need to say to CYA. Mm-hmm. All the stuff that you said before. So, yeah. But yeah, just to give you a follow-up on that story. What else do we have? Hey, it was interesting that this comes from a Kotaku article. And it says, earlier today I did some reporting on U.S. video game market data shared by Circana. Circana publishes reports publicly every month on which games are selling very well, which consoles are doing better than others, and how the industry is doing in the U.S. overall. This sort of thing is mostly helpful for insiders who actually work in the space and need this data to make decisions or predictions, but it's also useful and good just to have it in the public eye. It helps us better understand why certain games might get made. It can be used to identify causes and effects over time, and it just generally improves our overall understanding of how video games are made, bought, sold, and played. Unfortunately, Circana's reporting has recently lost two seriously valuable data sources, Xbox and EA. As of July 2026, Xbox is no longer a digital data sharing panel participating publisher with Circana, as was confirmed by the company today. When I reached out to Circana to get a look at what publishers remained on the panel, I was also informed that EA had recently dropped its membership. Time aligned to its going private. EA was just bought out by that Saudi Arabia company. What does that mean? Well, in order for Circana to tell us how well things sold, it needs someone who knows that information to pass it along. For physical games, that information comes from retailers and a few other sources that track purchases. But for digital sales, taking place through digital storefronts like the eShop, the PlayStation Store, the Microsoft Store. That data either needs to come from the owners of the platforms or from companies actually selling the games, the publishers. Circana's digital data sharing panel is essentially a group of publishers that willingly share some or all of that digital data. And until recently, Xbox and EA were a part of it, but not anymore. Xbox dropping out is a huge problem in particular. It not only eliminates transparency on Xbox first-party digital games in the U.S., including Call of Duty, but also further obscures the sales of any other publishers not already voluntarily sharing data with Circana, like Ubisoft and now EA. As a result, the software charts this month are full of guesswork. It's not to fault the analysts at Circana who do excellent data-based analytical work. At this point, it's either this or nothing, and I'll take a smart guess any day. This problem is likely to become worse in the coming years. Digital sales already make up a huge chunk of sales in general, meaning that only getting physical data hardly presents us with a full picture of how well a game is selling. PlayStation is ending disc production entirely in 2028, which means we'll be entirely dependent on PlayStation to tell firms like Circana what goes on with sales of their new first-party games. And PlayStation could always look at what Xbox and Nintendo were doing and decide, we're out of this too. Xbox is expected to follow suit in ending discs eventually as well. Its physical sales already seem pretty low compared to those of its competitors, and we already don't know anything sales-wise about Steam or Blizzard. For now, we're left with Bandai Namco, Capcom, Crystal Dynamics, Disney, Eidos, Konami, Sega, Sony, Square Enix, Take-Two, and Warner Brothers, who are currently on the panel. Apparently, also Xbox has pulled out of game sales data, the GSD, which fulfills a similar role to Circana, but over in Europe. Although there is no word yet from official sources if that is actually happening. He's reached out to confirm. That was interesting. That they had backed out of not necessarily representing, but handing over that data of like, here's what sold well. It's numbers, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that when you don't allow those numbers to be visible, there are other ways of finding out, I think. You can get an idea of how well a game is doing by getting a consensus of how many people you see playing that game, getting a consensus of how many people are talking about that game. You can kind of look over the internet to see, is there a lot of talk about this or that or whatever the case may be? Are people, you know, out there talking about it or whatever? There's other ways. But, man, to have that data direct from them was a real good measure of how a game is doing, especially on that particular platform.
Mm-hmm.
But when they want to pull out of that, it costs them nothing other than the fact that they can say numbers weren't so great.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's the case. If numbers are not so great and that's why they want to pull out of that. Or I don't know what the reason could be. I don't know if they had to pay a
better way to control the narrative, I guess, because sometimes the numbers are, they say what the numbers are, but
yeah, but if you have no numbers to show for that, then are you just making up numbers? Can you make up numbers?
Well, like you said, it can be found out, but it sounds like a better way to control the information, taking it out of there, giving it harder to access.
But if you don't have information, if you don't have the numbers, isn't that also a negative to you? I mean, you know what I mean? In other words, yeah. In other words, if they can't report of how your sales are doing, if you can't say, man, Call of Duty, well, it's Call of Duty, but I mean, if you can't say such and such game on the Xbox platform is selling amazingly well, then that doesn't seem to drum up interest in whatever it is that's selling amazingly well that you could put out there. because maybe it can sell even better if people know that, hey, there's a lot of people buying this game. You know, it's on a lot of people's radar. Why is it not on yours? Let me look at it. Let me see how good it is. There's a lot of people buying this game, apparently. Not that I ever looked at Circana's or whatever this company's name. Not that I ever looked at their numbers before, but I imagine plenty of other people use those numbers to give you ideas of here's how well this game sold this month, or here's how well Xbox is doing this month, or this 3 month period, or this year, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. You'd have those numbers, those statistics that you could look at and kind of, I don't want to say shape the narrative. I mean, there's no narrative to give you when you've got those numbers. The numbers are the narrative. But when you remove that, nobody's going to talk about you. Like, hey, it sold well here, it sold well here, it sold well here. We don't know what it did on Xbox because we don't have those numbers. You know, likely it sold well there too if it did over here. You know, especially if it's multi-platform. But now if it's exclusive, you have no idea of how well it did. I just don't know what prompts somebody to pull out of that. It feels sketchy. It feels like they're trying to hide things, but I don't know. It kind of makes you raise the eyebrow, right? Kind of like, what are you doing? What does that mean? Why are you doing that? Because if you don't want people to see what you're doing, it's typically because you're not confident in how well you're doing. Because when something is doing great, you tell everybody. And when something's doing really bad, you're not as loud about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of vibe it sends. I'm not saying it's one way or the other, but that's the kind of vibe that I get off of that. Yeah, I get, I'm looking at Lethal Migraine. He says, who cares what sales are? Who cares how a game is selling? If it sells one copy or 10 million, it has zero influence on me. I understand that. This is, and that doesn't necessarily relate to you. It can relate to other people, or maybe it doesn't at all. But it's still a statistic to have to look at, you know, in this period, this game sold this much, or how well it sold, or whatever the case may be. Do they decide to make a sequel out of it? Do they decide not to? What is the case on it? Because it sold whatever it sold. You know, to see how Forza Horizon whatever sold this month, to see how the new Gears of War game that's coming out is going to sell on the console itself. It is available on other places. It's available on PC. It's available on Steam. Although I don't necessarily know that Steam provides those numbers, but we can look at the concurrent users on Steam to see who's playing it and who's not. Mm-hmm. I agree. No aspect of game sale numbers means anything to anyone but investors. In a sense, you're right in that. I've always been interested in those numbers, not because I'm an investor, but I like to see how well something did. I like to get those statistics out of it. I don't scour them, but every now and again, especially at the end of the year, we get to see how well a game sold. Or at the end of a month, we see how well this game did or how well that game did, whatever the case may be. It was always interesting to see that going by the game itself. A lot of the times those are third parties, especially lately it's third parties, and they can give us those statistics. But on the first party system type stuff, you're not going to get that from Xbox anymore. So I guess I understand, Lethal Migraine, that it doesn't matter to you about this. And maybe what matters to me more is why they pulled out of doing it. Not necessarily what this is going to deny investors or us or anything like that, but why did they decide not to give those numbers anymore?
My gut instinct is to hide the information, to have more control over it.
Yeah. But you already look suspicious for doing it.
Oh, well.
You know?
Looking suspicious or having that control?
What control do you have, though? Other than the fact that nobody knows what it's doing. You know? Nobody knows what your success or failure is.
You know, that's
it. In sales. But how do you control that if you don't tell people? You know? Like, if you're not going to tell us how well something did, how do we know if it was successful or a failure without you telling us those numbers? And if you remove that ability, then how can you boast it without telling us? And if you don't tell us,
trust what we tell you
from the company itself.
Yeah,
sure. They really expect us to do that?
Probably not.
Yeah. But that's my whole point. Mm-hmm. Why'd you step away from it? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Just thought it was interesting. EA, I sort of get because they kind of went private and they're like, yeah, whatever. We don't need to tell you. You know, they got sold. It's also just a publisher rather than an actual company like the big, you know, Xbox and mm-hmm. Sony and Nintendo. But at the same time, you know, you won't get you're not going to get EA numbers anymore as well, with, I guess, the exception of whatever you can piece together from, like I said, getting the vibes, mm-hmm. you know, basically it's a vibe thing. I see this many people on my friends list playing this game. It must be pretty good. Let me look into it. I see this many threads on game forums talking about it. It must be pretty good. Let me look into it. You know, that sort of thing. I just wonder what the point is of not releasing your numbers anymore. Is it because your numbers are bad, because you don't want to give those numbers out, or you're tired of explaining it, or what? Why? Again, you mentioned Control, but if you don't tell us, then we don't know. And we can't assume either way. So, there. You can't assume that it's good. You can't assume that it's bad. Because we don't have numbers. Oh, another update before we go. Halloween, the game, which we said was not going to get a release in Australia or New Zealand, is apparently getting a release in New Zealand. It will get a digital release in New Zealand. According to a new statement from Illphonic, the conclusion came down to which ratings body applies to what territory. When we partnered with physical distributors to sell packaged goods in Australia and New Zealand, we learned that the Australian, the Australian Classification Board rating used for physical took precedence over the IARC rating, which is for digital. In other words, the Australian refusal only blocks the physical release across both territories. It does not affect New Zealand's own digital classification, which falls under a different system entirely. And so in that regard, digital-only releases can legally be sold in New Zealand without classification, though some platforms choose to seek one anyway. Australia, fully blocked. You're not going to be able to play it there, digital or otherwise. Mm-hmm. But you apparently will in New Zealand. So... for those of you listening in New Zealand, absolutely none of you, you will be able to play the Halloween game. So, and what else? I don't know. We got like 7 minutes here. There's a Star Wars game coming out this week that I'm still very much interested in. Star Wars Zero Company. The XCOM-like Star Wars game. Mm-hmm. It's not a full price game, which is kind of nice. I think it's running right now I think I can find a copy for like $45. I think it's going to be like a $50 game type thing. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I think on Steam it's running at $55 or something. But it's one I'm actually very interested in. I just don't know if I'm going to pick it up now or if I'm going to wait and pick it up later. Because very shortly in September, we get the Wolverine release. That has gone from a game that I'll likely pick up very soon after release to a game that I will likely pick up down the line after release. Mm-hmm. It's a single-player game. There's no multiplayer involved. It is absolute, just like Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
I am playing Spider-Man 2 that released 2-3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It released a good ways back, and I'm still just, you know, I still haven't finished it. I'm still playing and working on it. Because mm-hmm. I got in on it very late. Because mm-hmm. there was a deal on that Venom statue thing, whatever it was, that came with the game, and that's when I picked it up. Mm-hmm. So with Wolverine, I kind of am in the same boat on that. I will just wait until you know, it shows up in a nice sale or something down the road, and I'll be right there for it. It's not like I'm going to be buying a new console anytime soon. It's not like it's going to get released on PC anytime soon, because this is one of theirs that it's not going to happen with. And so I just feel like, eh, I can pick it up later when it's cheaper.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, the Zero Company is 50 and 60 on Steam. Okay. Got the regular edition and the deluxe edition.
Right.
Yeah.
The deluxe edition is just some cosmetics, of which I have no desire. I don't know if there's early access play to it, which there may be for people who pick up the earlier versions or the big digital deluxe version, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But again, that doesn't pull me in either. It's also a game. I don't know that that Zero Company has multiplayer tied to it. Even if it did, I'm not usually a multiplayer guy for those types of games. So it's also one that I could easily pass on.
Yeah, it's nothing but cosmetics in the deluxe edition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all cosmetics. No extra missions or anything like that. It's all cosmetic. Mm. So I know Matt had already pre-ordered it, but it's a Star Wars game. What do you expect? So there's that Star Wars game this month. There's Wolverine next month. There's likely some other stuff next month that I might be interested in, or at least might be, you know, at least looking at to see how well it does. I don't remember any at the time, but I just know that everybody's moved their stuff away from GTA's release. So we're getting a packed September, we're getting a packed October, and then we're getting nothing after that until I think February of next year because of GTA's release. So the October one is got to be Galactic Racer for me. Another star. Did I think in this year of 2026 that I would be interested in two Star Wars games, much less one? Mm-hmm. Here I am with two games set in Star Wars universe lore that I am absolutely down to play day one. Zero Company this month, Galactic Racer in October.
Yeah.
Galactic Racer doesn't necessarily have a tie-in the way, like, Zero Company, that's got a tie-in. You could actually, and I've got a page marked somewhere. And it may not be in our, it's not here in our news, but I've got one saved where it's like, here's the things to watch. Here's your homework to do leading up to the release of Zero Company. Because it literally fits into the timeline of Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Galactic Racer does not. It's just a racer.
Yeah.
But Zero Company actually fits in with Star Wars. It pulls in characters from other media and uses them in this game, whether they are NPC type stuff or they're stuff that they're guys that you can play, story plots that whatever. So, yeah, there's some stuff there. I'm not as big into it as other people may be. Matt, of course. But it is always curious to do that. Oh, man, you guys have written some stuff. Microsoft hasn't cared about video games since they fired... I thought it was Dan Matrick. Maybe it is Don Matrick. Everything they do is sketchy. I don't know who this other person is forever. Do you guys have the same stance on physical versus digital games as you do about commerce? For instance, if store has tap-to-pay only versus store that says cash only, would you support one store over the other? I don't really carry cash, so I would. You know, if that's all I have going for me, I have to go with the tap to pay because I don't really carry cash. So anyway, that's it. We got to go. Here's music from Blood. I guess a game called Blood. It's called Refresh Supply. No. It's Blood Refresh Supply. So that's what this is. We'll be back next Saturday. Have a good one. Talk to you later. Bye.